So Mark's presence in the pulpit today is a good place for me to introduce what will be an emergence homily rather than a full-fledged sermon. But full disclosure, it will travel to its conclusion by way of the unexpected death Monday morning of my dog Lyra. That's not something I was able to put aside in my reflections this week, and I ask for your understanding about that. Mark laid out a timeline of billions of years of evolution, and he's never done anything this public here before. Until a few weeks ago, no one could say that they saw this coming. And even when it began showing up in the worship calendar, it was at first listed on a different weekend than the one we eventually settled on. We humans have evolved to see the future better than any animal that has ever lived on this planet, but we always get it somewhat wrong. The future is always a guess. Now, I suspect no one's heart is racing at this observation. None of you are berating yourselves and saying, "How could I have been so blind? I did not realize that." But really, what unfolded this morning is quite stunning, and I want to shed some light on that. I haven't forewarned Mark about what I'm going to say, so perhaps his heart is racing a little bit now. But rest assured, Mark, this isn't going to be about you, as amazing as you are, but about all of us as a community. First, I'm going to address those of you raised with traditional Jewish, Christian, or Muslim beliefs about God, you know, the one who is in control of the universe forever and knows everything that will happen before it does. Please set aside any continuing belief in that God for now. And not because I believe that if there is anything God-like going on, the better evidence suggests that it is emerging from our collective intelligence and is new in the evolutionary story of the universe. I'm asking you to set that God aside because, against all odds, evolution has somehow led to your having a mind capable of doing that, a mind capable of imagining and knowing the traditional God, millions of gods, as the Hindus do, or no God at all. As awesome as evolution's timeline is, the current state of living mindfulness is even more conducive to wonder at the mystery of it all. Now, when Mark does his meditation with his science students, he told me, he asks, "When did your life begin?" And he invites them into a biology question. Even though once it gets into the deep past, beyond that first life of Earth, it's going to turn into a chemistry question. And still further to the Big Bang, it's going to turn into a physics question. This morning, at my suggestion, Mark switched from "When did your life begin?" to "When did your story begin?" Whether through politeness, a willingness to explore, or a change in his own thinking, he embraced my suggestion that evolution belongs in a Sunday service because it works as a story from which we draw lessons about what it means to live and love. Evolution as science is a matter of observed outcomes. 90% of all species that have ever lived on Earth have died out, and that's not counting what we're doing to them right now. And that's why the poet Stephen Dunn says mournfully that it stinks of extinction. In his poem at the Smithville Methodist Church, which I've read here several times, Dunn, an atheist, bemoans the fact that the truth of evolution pales beside the magic of his young child's joyful, song-filled encounter with the Jesus story presented to her at vacation Bible camp. But, as Mark said, evolution as a story points him towards something he can name as the spirit of life, even if the word spirit, and I paraphrase here, gives the scientist in him the heebie-jeebies. In the safety and respectful openness of this sanctuary and this faith community, extinction is not the main plot of the story embedded in evolution. Instead, it is a story of emergence. How has the universe self-organized itself over time into complex, totally novel forms of existence? When we posed the question we took as our theme here at CVU US this month, what does it mean to say we are a people of emergence? We are asking about our connection to a facet of evolution that repeatedly redefines life, and especially human life, in unpredictable ways. Only in the last instant of human life on Earth have we begun developing a language of emergence to name that. Set the idea of a traditional God aside, and the universe as we understand it has never had the capacity to see emergent phenomena coming. And maybe it does now in us. Or maybe not. Last Sunday, I was in Washington with Michelle to celebrate Passover with friends and family. I seized the opportunity to go to the Easter morning worship services at the historic All Souls Unitarian Church. Reverend Robert Hardy spoke on the resurrection of Jesus, emphasizing over and over again that it didn't happen overnight from the perspective of the humans in that story. It took them time to believe what had happened, and even longer to incorporate the consequences into their lives. Despite what Jesus had foretold, according to the record we have, none of them really expected anything like this to happen. They could not foresee such a fundamental shift in their reality. Easter is not the only place in old-time religion where we encounter stories we can now look on as emergence experiences. Humans intuited emergence long before they could look at it as a science. When Moses addresses the burning bush, in which God is telling him to go to Egypt and free his people from slavery, that Passover story Michelle and I celebrated last weekend, Moses asks what name he should use for God. God's initial reply has usually been translated, "I am who I am." But the original Hebrew can just as accurately be translated as, "I will be who I will be," or even, "I am becoming who I will be." And the last line in our Kabir poem, written over 5 centuries ago in India, speaks of the Lord himself taking form as millions of ages pass, and the swing between consciousness and unconsciousness goes on and on. Now, the emergent God of love I preach to you is not science. It is faith beyond, but consistent with science as I understand it. For it to mature as truth, it will have to become a communal story expressing the truth about love as we as a community experience it. A story embraced by, quote, all manner of people among us, needy, joyful, frightened, anxious, bored, as Reverend Hackett Evans put it in our reading. And I would add, people who are sad, like I have been this week. Lyra died alone in the kennel because Michelle and I got home too late from Washington Sunday to pick her up. We were told she seemed fine when the dogs were put to bed, but the vet's post-mortem exam suggested that during the night she bloated with gas, her stomach flipped, she went into shock and died. I had never heard of such a thing, although I now know it's a well-known hazard for older dogs of her body type. It's typically fatal unless quickly noticed and surgically repaired. Stress can be a contributing factor, so of course, I can't help but wonder whether we could have saved her had we been able to bring her home to her familiar couch near our bed that last night. I didn't see it coming. But it changed how I see what has been happening here this morning. We could say that there was nothing novel in an evolutionary sense about Mark's tentative suggestion many weeks ago, on which I pounced, that he could someday share his guided meditation with CVU US. You could predict that something like that would happen sooner or later, because one of the hallmarks of this community is that we encourage everybody, especially our introverts, to express themselves in new ways. And there was nothing novel about Lyra's death. Dogs have been dying this way, presumably for the whole 20,000 years that human beings have been bonding with them. The more I thought about it, though, I remembered that what, deceptively, I think, wasn't truly novel this week nests in a breathtaking scaffold of emergence events. Events that Mark named, like the development of human language skills and mindfulness. And to put it in UU terms, awareness that we are part of an indivisible web of existence. These are planet-changing events now. We are changing the planet. And these planet-changing events were interlaced with countless plausible coincidences that brought Mark and I together to build a worship service around these topics. But in no truthful sense could I say I saw the actual experience of this day coming. In no truthful sense could I tell you that I expected this week, working on this service, to turn over and over to one of our hymns, a hymn that I never get around to scheduling, the second verse of which reads, "There have been losses on the way, a parent, partner, friend. At times I need to grieve and say, I have enough to bear today. Be near and help me mend." And yet there was Mark. Formerly improbable worship partner Mark, near in spirit as I wrote. And here are all of you, near in reality, a community of healing when I need it, because you come together week after week to testify to the countless guises of love. You are spring. You are the resurrecting spirit of life. I knew it from all that's been said among us the past 7 years that I've been our minister, and still, like the disciples of Jesus in the Easter story, I didn't see it coming as it has this week. It doesn't happen overnight, as Reverend Hardy said. It doesn't happen for sure overnight. But what true blessing does? As Unitarian Universalists, we want to be resurrecting rather than resurrected. We want to be where the love action is, even when it's laced with sorrow. And I'm so grateful to all of you for being there with me this week. I know many of you have been through the same experience. I know there's a family in Weybridge going through something even harder. But that's why we gather. That's why we exist. This is how we find out what the spirit of life-giving love and love-giving life is all about. Blessed be. Amen.